Hi, everyone. I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County and your host for Education Conversations, where we share ideas on education today and ways to help prepare students to thrive. I'm really excited about our second compilation episode, and I hope you all listened to the last one. This all comes from season two, and today we're going to feature highlights from several of our podcast guests because there was a lot that actually happened this past year. It was pretty incredible, and I just thank all the guests that we had. We saw the passing of a history-making tax referendum, a very long, drawn-out legislative session and that came with some educational policy changes. And we covered all of these topics in our season two podcast. So there's a whole lot to unpack. I want to jump right into this episode. So take a listen. And as we talk about policies and partnerships and how it all contributes to a prosperous community. Early in season two, we were deeply involved in advocating for the passage of the Sarasota County tax referendum, which will actually be in effect from 2026 through 2030. And I wanted to start today by revisiting our pre-election podcast with Superintendent Terry Connor to remind us why this funding source remains so important to education.
So we're looking to support things that the referendum has supported over the last 22 years, with obviously enhancements in the areas of safety and security. That's an ever-changing, ever-evolving area that we want to stay on top of the latest technologies to ensure that our school campuses are as safe as they can be. We're looking also more focused on workforce education and training with career technical pathways for our students. So we understand that not every student opts to go to a four-year university. Maybe it's a two-year state college. Maybe it's directly into the workforce. So we understand that you can make a very good living, a high wage, and help have an impact right here in your local community with jobs that are needed right here in Sarasota County. And we need to be a part of helping supply those employers with employees that are workforce ready. And so a lot of the focus of the referendum will be on enhancing that area. In terms of the arts and music and what we've done in this county with the referendum over the past several years in preserving and maintaining really high quality programs in those areas, we want to continue that as well. So that is a big part of what the referendum will go to. And we talk about teachers. You know, we can't get anything done without high quality teachers who want to stay here for the long term. And so we need to offer competitive salaries, great benefits, having growth opportunities through professional learning. And, you know, that's what a big portion of the referendum will go to, is to supporting our staff, not just teachers, but even our non-instructional staff, so that we have the roles filled and we have people who are there delivering on that mission of educating every student every day.
Later in the year, the referendum was still top of mind, as we saw in our podcast with Christine Robinson, Executive Director of the Argus Foundation. She talked about the power of community partners when it comes to change making and specifically mentioned the passing of the tax referendum. So now let's take a listen.
Despite three storms during election season, which is super challenging, this tax referendum passed with the highest passage rate in the state of Florida.
Kudos to your leadership, but truly to the Argus Foundation for having planted that seed years ago with Wilma Hamilton's visionary, you know, leadership and collaborative spirit to kind of set the stage for what brought us to here today. And so that's a great success story. Let me just say that's a great success story.
Yeah, and I just want to say, that was a partnership. We just kind of managed it. That partnership, the community partners we had in that, almost all the business organizations were involved in that and significantly contributed to it. I mean, they were a huge driver in it.
Right.
We got support from the Education Foundation, right. and everybody was helping to spread the word. It was truly a community effort. So yeah, I want to make sure I'm clear. We just kind of managed the logistics,
sure.
But it was an amazing community effort.
One of our most listened to podcasts in season two was with State Representative Fiona McFarlane, who shared her takeaways from this year's epic legislative session. Here she talks about some of the policy changes and how the accountability of those monies will now be allocated to school districts across Florida.
If you are listening to an education podcast in the state of Florida, you are probably one of the parents that emailed me during session. Because one of the elements of our FEFP funding formula that we really spent a lot of time on was how we fund these magnet programs, these accelerated academic
programs. That's exactly right.
Yep. AP, IB, ACE, dual enrollment. Now, I'm going to get really wonky for a minute, but I think we're in a podcast, so this is the right format for it. Many, many years ago, 20, 30 years ago, we created this system of trying to incentivize schools to offer these accelerated academic options, and we called it an add-on weight. And the way we did it, we'll use IB, International Baccalaureate. We'll use IB as an example. If you're a school, we would really like you to offer IB programs. But those are expensive programs. You have to, you know, you have to enroll in the IB global network. The teachers have to get trained in a certain way. Some of the classes need expensive equipment like a microscope or different materials. So there's a cost to offering those programs. And we wanted to recognize that. So we said, if you're going to offer this program, we'll give you a weighted bump for funding.
Yep.
In this formula, the input variable is the base student allocation, which is when we say the money follows the child, that's that money that follows the child.
Right.
That's the input variable is the base student allocation. But then there's a multiplier. And one multiplier is, you know, offering the program to begin with. And the second multiplier comes when your student scores well on the final exam.
Right.
And that bump, in the state's opinion, should have been a bump that goes to the teacher. This is a bonus. It's a bump up on their salary because we really want to reward those teachers who are teaching the magnet programs, especially because they have to do more training outside of school mm-hmm. hours. Mm-hmm. That was great. That worked out great in the past. It brought us to the point where most, if not all, of our schools are offering some accelerated academic program in some form or another. However, the formula got away from us. The reason why this got away from us is because that input variable, that base student allocation,
yep.
has ballooned in the 30 years yes. since we created this program
right.
in a way that didn't tick and tie to the growth of these accelerated academic programs. Now, this is a mix between policy and a financial accounting explanation that I've just given, but what did it result in? What it resulted in was a ballooning pot of money that went to the school districts, and we very loosely just said any money that comes from this quote-unquote quote add-on formula needs to be reinvested into the system. It needs to go to the teacher salary and the teacher bonuses or reinvested to cover the cost of the program. And we sort of left it at that. We didn't audit it. We didn't check up on it. But the money just grew in a way that didn't correlate with growth of those programs or growth of students who were scoring a high score on the final exam.
Mm-hmm.
And so 3 years ago, we started to try to figure out if the money was appropriately used anymore. And we just said, hey, school districts, can you tell us where the money is going? We could only ascertain that 5% of this money was going to teacher salaries or teacher bonuses. And the other 95% was question mark. That was a little bit alarming to us. I truthfully, personally, don't believe that only 5% of the money was going to teachers. I think there probably was a little bit more that was going to teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But fine, we can only trust what the data shows us. So if you want to assume that only 5% is going to teachers, we need to do something about that. So then the next year, we said, let's take another look. And individual school districts break down for us where that money is going. If it's not going to teacher salaries, where is it going to? You know, are you buying a new school uniforms for the field hockey team or something? Where's the money going?
Right.
And when we broke it down even further from the financial categories that were reported back up to us from the school districts through the Department of Education to the legislature, was that only 60% were either going to teacher salary, materials, cost of the program, and 40% was just going into a category called other. Now, in Sarasota, I spent a lot of time with Superintendent O'Connor, and we learned that some of that money was going to an ACE program coordinator, mm-hmm. you know, someone at each school who's tracking the hours and the credits and managing that, because that is truthfully a very full-time job.
Yes.
Or perhaps it was going into travel. Maybe we were sending the teacher down to Manatee County to try to recruit students up into our schools, mm-hmm. or maybe they were traveling to a conference or something. But whatever the detail may be, it was just going into this category called other, and that made us uncomfortable. Now, I would bring that money home every day to Sarasota because I feel very confident in the conversations that I've had with our district leadership about where the money was going.
Sure.
But I couldn't vouch for other districts.
Right.
So in the beginning of session, we took this approach that we said, fine, if we can only tell that 60% is going back to these students, and we've seen a decline in both offering and enrollment in these academic, these accelerated academic programs, then we need to tighten the belt financially. And very boldly, we said we would cut that add-on weight total amount by 50%.
That was the original policy proposal.
That was the original proposal.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
Did we hear about it?
It created an uproar.
My office has not received more feedback about any other issue in my 5 years up there.
Wow.
And we hear from constituents very regularly. This issue just really
struck a nerve.
It struck a nerve.
Yep.
And I was hearing from our district leadership, and I was hearing from families and teachers, and it gave me great pause. Mm. And thankfully, at the very end of our extended session, we retained our current level of funding. We actually increased it. We increased it, you know, 3-5%, which is a pretty average year-over-year increase. Mm-hmm. But we changed it. Instead of having this BSA, this add-on weight formula, we moved it into the FEFP calculation, and we made it a categorical.
Okay.
When we say categorical, we've got, you know, 12 or 13 of these, and we say this money can only go to this purpose. So, for example, one categorical that we have in the FEFP formula is for teacher salaries.
Right.
So a district can never take this pot of money that we've given them. That's, you know, we call them colors of money or pots of money. They can never move that categorical of salary into another pot of money. They can't use teacher salary categorical to pay for transportation. There's another categorical for transportation. Now, we made one for these academic accelerated programs. I am pleased with where we ended up. I don't love the process by which we got there, but we got to the right place. I mean, this is politics. It's the sausage-making factory, right?
Sure, sure.
I do believe we got into a good place in the end, but we will have more work to do.
We do have more work to do, and collectively, we can get it done. Community collaboration pays off, and no one knows this better than Kimberly Lent Morales from the Helios Education Foundation. Helios recently published a report called Florida's Future Billions, and it demonstrates just how vital post-secondary attainment is to our state's economic health. So here's a snippet explaining the backbone of this important study.
When we did this analysis, we knew that there were going to be multiple audiences that could use the data. So we wanted to focus on different ways of defining the benefits of college. So we wanted to look at it from the individual level. So what will a student, individual resident of Florida get when they go to college? And then what will the state get in both fiscal and social gains? So fiscal gains, what comes out of taxes and things like that. And then the social gains, what does a state save? There's great research that shows that someone with a college education or higher level of education beyond high school, they have greater health status. So they're less likely to have comorbid disease like diabetes, heart disease, things like that, that might cost the state money. They're less likely to rely on public assistance. They have lower crime rates. So the things that the state might have to pay are lower. So there's these great social benefits that a community has when a student goes to college. So we looked at it from those three ways. And looking at it at an individual level, we found that someone who goes to college, gets a bachelor's degree, is making 2 times in their lifetime over someone who only gets a high school diploma. So we're talking over $1 million difference there over the lifetime. And that's a big difference. We also wanted to look at, again, not every student is going to go straight into a 4-year degree. Mm-hmm. Florida has excellent policies and articulation agreements to help a student start in a 2-year degree and then go to a 4-year degree. So when we compared the associate's degrees to a high school diploma alone, there's a 20% difference, a premium over what a high school diploma earner would make on just that level alone. So that's kind of the individual level. So taking it down there, but then we also wanted to see what are the social and the fiscal gains. Mm-hmm. And we were able to play with some scenarios. So this is where it really got exciting in the research. So we were able to show what does someone make at different degree levels, but the real economic modeling came in. We tried 4 different scenarios. So what happens if our community doubles down and we increase college enrollment by 10%? We increase college completion by 20%. We increase college readiness. So this is just students who graduate high school and are ready to go to college by 10%. And then one that I think is very interesting, especially for the work that you guys do at the Education Foundation, what happens if we bring all racial and ethnic groups up to the same level of degree attainment?
And that's the hardest part.
That is, yes. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about, is it worth it? What is equity these days? Mm-hmm. And having those hard economic numbers to show that there is value in making sure that all students have the opportunity to go to college and get a college degree. We have numbers behind that to show what it means for our state.
So I would think that your numbers then translate into the parallel that it can provide a pathway of prosperity.
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
So can you hone in and give us a little bit of understanding about Sarasota County? Since many of our listeners are right here in our community, it's the work that we're focusing on. So help kind of translate for us the impact that it would have on our local economy, our local community, should we double down and do the efforts that you just described?
Yes, great question. And I will say, you guys are some of the first to see the county level data. We do have data for all 67 counties that we are going to be releasing in January. But you guys are getting a sneak peek. So all of the listeners are going to get to see the Sarasota County data. So again, we have those four scenarios. Under those four scenarios, what are the fiscal gains? What are the social gains? And the really cool thing that I think is important for communities like Sarasota is that we can get the gain per student. So you make it really small and actionable. So again, if someone is questioning what is the value of a student going to college, helping a student go to college, we can put a number behind that one student, helping one student. It means X number of dollars in gains.
That's great.
For Sarasota County. So just looking at that first scenario of college enrollment, when we increase that by 10% for one cohort of high school graduates, the aggregate fiscal gains, $92 million.
Wow.
Per year.
Oh, per year?
Per year. No. So it adds on itself every year that you increase $92 million.
This report is so full of valuable information, and it was the catalyst for our mini-series where we launched a whole lot of conversation on education and the economy and how it's all tied together. So I hope you'll listen to the entire podcast with Kimberly and also check out the full Florida's Future Billions report on their website, which you can find at Helios, H-E-L-I-O-S, helios.org. Aside from education and the economy, another common theme we saw this past year was the unmistakable value of gathering input from multiple stakeholders. Leadership Florida's Vice President of Programs, Abby Stewart, who I dearly love, saw this firsthand in Leadership Florida classes, proving that the betterment of education is strongest when everyone is represented.
Oftentimes, we make decisions about what's happening in a classroom without a teacher at the table. And the beauty of the Leadership Florida education class is that everybody is at the table at one time. And so it's this beautiful mix of education professionals from district leaders, charter school organizations, teachers, principals, administrators, maybe coaches, those from education foundations, the nonprofit space, the education organizations that support educators. So whether that's an Impact Florida or a TNTP or a Teach for America, and funders. So brings a network of people together from early learning all the way through post-secondary education. And the content, I think, is pushing us to think differently about education and what might be possible if we're going to do education better. But the real magic is the conversation that happens when you have a teacher, a principal, and a funder sitting at a table having a conversation. It's the after-hours conversation that happens when somebody has an idea and you have all the people that could potentially make that idea possible. And the network of support that happens when you bring this mix of people together from all over the state that are all focused on creating the best education system in Florida. So it's really special.
Tampa Bay Partnership President and CEO Bemetra Simmons showed us what can happen when government, nonprofit, and the business sectors intersect. She brought findings from the Regional Competitiveness Report and talked specifically about education in Sarasota County, what we're doing well, and where we can improve.
Sarasota's doing a lot right when it comes to education, a lot to be proud of. For example, Sarasota has the lowest disconnected youth rate in the region and lower than the United States average at a little less than 7%. That rate for the region is a little over 11%, just to put that in perspective. And for those listeners who may not know, disconnected youth are young people ages 16 to 24 who are not enrolled in school, nor are they working. I think the new term that we're starting to use is opportunity youth versus disconnected youth, but want to get those folks plugged along. So you guys are doing great there. Also, high school graduation rates are outstanding here in Sarasota at a little over 90%. But the high school graduation rate for economically disadvantaged students is about 6 percentage points lower. So we have some work to do there. We're also seeing that same type of disparity in the region. So that's not unique to Sarasota. You guys also have excellent educational attainment rates. You guys are doing better than the state and better than the region in terms of the percentage of residents that have a bachelor's degree or higher. So you're doing really well there. And also outstanding third grade reading levels at almost 68% here. That's outpacing the region and the state significantly. The region's third grade reading level rate is a little over 52%, just to put that in perspective. Those numbers get even more sobering if you break it down in demographics, Black students, white students, Hispanic students. For those listeners who may not know, I like to say, why are we talking about third grade reading levels? Because kindergarten through third grade, as you know, is when you learn to read. And then beginning in fourth grade, you read to learn. So if you don't learn how to read by third grade, it's very difficult to catch up. And then that has long-term impacts on high school graduation rates, labor force participation rates, disconnected youth, all those things have an impact. And just to think that we've got, you know, kids in third grade that are kind of OUT out already is really like sobering.
To that point, United Way Sunco CEO Jessica Muroff talked about why they are committed to focusing on the importance of early learning.
So education is probably where we spend the largest percentage of our investments and annually because it is so critically important. And we really focus on early learning in two critical areas. So making sure that that children are entering kindergarten prepared to learn, and then making sure that they are reading on grade level by third grade. These two indicators here, especially the reading on grade level by third grade, are the most important long-term predictors of their future success in life. And so we believe very much, and as you do too, if we're able to get more children reading on grade level by third grade, we have exponentially increased the chances of that child being successful later in life, exponentially.
Yeah.
So this is why it's critically important to invest now in the interventions and supports to support these children so that they can be successful in the future.
At the other end of early learning, we spoke with CareerSource Sunco CEO Josh Matlock, who focuses on connecting businesses and students after high school. CareerSource keeps its finger on the pulse of what is needed here in Sarasota County's workforce. And this past fall, Josh had the opportunity to be a part of the district's CEO in Schools program to explore actionable solutions for students who may not be college bound, but certainly may still need some support.
I know that the Education Foundation is working with the school district on the CEOs in schools.
Right.
And so I got paired with Riverview High School. And in fact, yesterday I had our team members who are youth focused come in and speak with the principal there, Aaron. And we've come up with some ideas, and we're going to try to develop some systemic solutions to the need to be more career focused with some of the students. And there's going to be a lot of students. I think that the numbers were about 30% of the students there are not necessarily university bound, but need some career options. And so we're hoping to develop some ways to offer them some career options and give them some chances to say, hey, here's some different occupations out in the community that you need to learn more about. And if one really piques your interest, then here's some next steps and we can help you along the way.
Josh's podcast was recorded in early 2025. So this is a great reminder. We should circle back with him in season 3 and just see how those ideas manifested. During season 2, we also explored why some students start college but aren't able to complete their studies for one reason or another. And we all know that reaching that attainment goal just doesn't met with success for all students. And so the Education Foundation, through its Planet Sarasota work, collaborates with key partners like the State College of Florida and others to re-engage these students who, what we call and define it as stopping out, they stop out. So Gulf Coast Community Foundation's Jennifer Johnston, who is an active supporter of this project, and we thank Gulf Coast for funding much of this work, talks about the importance of helping these students get back on track.
It has been a joy to be a part of the Planet Sarasota Steering Committee and to work with all sectors in looking at how we can support our young people in connecting to the workforce post-high school. We want our graduates to stay local. One of the projects I'm excited about is our Stopout Initiative,
yes,
reconnecting students who started college but didn't finish with a completion coach, helping them overcome those barriers. We don't want students to have debt with no degree. So really looking at how we can reconnect them.
Of the 67 counties in Florida, 63 counties have education foundations actively in place to support students and teachers. So we had Mary Chance, who recently retired as the Consortium of Florida Education Foundation's president and CEO, talk about what did she see as the future role of education foundations in these changing times.
What I hope remains constant is that local education foundations remember and hold fast to the fact that they hold their community's long-term value for their public schools or values. And so, again, a lot of our members have been around for 30 plus years. Some are having their 40th anniversary this year. And they've been there through all the different changes, and yet they remain. And so they're not about a program or a thing. They are about their community's long-term vested interest in their underscore their schools. And I think that's super important. In terms of hopes, I hope that with all of the things that are happening that are new and different, that education foundations can really lean into that role of acting as R&D for their schools and think about ways they could seed learning innovation through an Ed Foundation and try something in their schools that may or may not be something that's scalable and fit with the long-term vision of the community.
We all know that Sarasota continues to grow, and we remain curious about the economic trends we're seeing. So we invited Aaron Silk, president and CEO of Sarasota's Economic Development Corporation, to come in and share recent insights. And I'll tell you, it's really looking great.
The trends are good. So since we have seen quite a bit of growth, and since 2020, we've had a lot of in-migration population, and with that population has brought founders, it's brought executives who have relocated here, and it's brought different types of industry. And so we're seeing really a maturing of our economy. We're tracking the industry growth and finding that we're really reflective of the Tampa Bay region. Mm-hmm. So you hear us talk a lot about Tampa Bay because Tampa Bay has a really strong brand, especially internationally. And when companies are looking at Sarasota County, they're looking in Tampa, Pasco, really the whole region. And also the workforce lives here in the region, right? The workforce doesn't see county lines. And so we're talking a lot about being part of that Tampa Bay region. It's very strong for our brand as an economy, but it's also very reflective of the industry changes that we've seen over the last couple years. And the changes in industry is an increase in growth in technology companies, software development, and also in that corporate headquarters. The great things about those industries is they come with high wages, and that's really good for our community.
When it comes to workforce connections, we're seeing some partnerships bringing forth really innovative solutions. And again, another terrific guest, Dan Sidler, who's with the Greater Sarasota Chamber of Commerce, and also Barb Clapp of Dwyer Workforce Development. They have a proven approach to healthcare training, and I think it was really neat to listen to what Barb had to say.
workforce programs don't technically work well if it's just giving somebody a job. If you have the same barriers that exist before you got the job, after you have the job, you're not going to be successful. Or if you have the same work hygiene that you had beforehand, mm-hmm. or if you didn't even have a role model for good work hygiene, mm-hmm. you're not going to be successful. So one of the things we did from day one was insist on comprehensive wraparound services and person-centered case management. And that has made a huge difference. The other thing we decided to do is to partner. We can do more together. And we've decided that any nonprofits that wanted to partner with us, workforce boards, that kind of thing, if we could find a way to team like we have here, then we could actually help the whole person even further. And it's worked out terrifically.
So we know the value of partners, and we have incredible collaborations with dedicated individuals and businesses through our local college access network, Planet Sarasota, and Thomas Williams and Loredana Guillaume, who are on our team. They came in to help and talk about how they help with college applications, which of course includes technical colleges, talked about FAFSA completions and much, so much more. The post-secondary and business partnerships that they continue to develop are absolutely irreplaceable when it comes to student outcomes and its success. So listen to this.
I think with some of our partners, it's been really great to meet with them and show what we can offer and get a sense as to what they need with the students that they help serve. So with Dance Next Generation, for example, they are really helping their students culturally, making sure that they have enrichment after school, but that college piece as a whole, they don't have. So that's mainly what they wanted for us. Last year, they had a few seniors, so I was able to help them through the college application process, the scholarship process, and even navigating after. So I still communicate with some of those students at SCF today. Currently, they have students that aren't seniors, but they want to get a head start in them being able to understand what their post-secondary goals are. So it's more so us understanding the students they serve, how they serve them, and how we can supplement that. And if we can't, we can connect them to another partner that can supplement them in that way.
I just want to add one part on the business partners that what's been really exciting. I think my first year here was a lot of guest speakers. So mm-hmm. you came in and you talked about the insurance agency or whatever it may be. The next year was like really career fairs where we're bringing a group of them, having students walk through. Last year was site visits where we've taken students to different locations such as CAE so they can see the simulators in action and the like. And where we're going is on job shadows. That's where we want to go and bring students so that they can be on the job with somebody to ask questions back and forth in internships. That's where we really want to go. So more work-based learning. Loredana pulled off a great thing we did with Booker Middle School. This is the second year. This year will be the third year. This is a career expo, and I differentiate that because it's middle school versus the high school, and it's really all about inspiration. A child can't be what a child can't see. So we get the companies and we tell them, come and show what you do, talk to them and get the kids excited about it. And it's just amazing to see students come out of that. Oh, I want to talk to Mr. Johnson again. He's going to get me onto the fire department. He's going to help me with this job here. So really inspiration.
I hope you enjoyed that. It was what a way to end on such a high note. And so this wraps up our final compilation episode from season two. It was a lot. We had so much to unpack, but what an amazing just cadre of guests that we had throughout the season. And we are already underway to talk about much, much more in upcoming season three. I'm telling you, education is changing, everything's evolving, and we've got so many different partners and people in our community who are helping to make a difference. And we just want to shine a light on each and every one of them. So in the meantime, I hope you will check us out at our website, which is edfoundationsrq.org. And be sure to tune in and share our podcast series, which is called, again, Education Conversations, with your friends and colleagues. It's just such a great way to bring more people to the table on such a vital and critical topic in our community. So there you go, everybody. Season two is a wrap. And I can't thank enough all the terrific guests we had. And also thank you to our listeners for joining us. I just love that you are leaning into these conversations. And I certainly look forward to kicking off season three very shortly. So everyone, for now, This is Jennifer Vine, signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.